My uncle, do you remember how you always protected us, along with our mother, from all sorts of calamities?
Your partiality, like the wings of a bird, saved us from poison and arson. Purport by His Divine Grace Isa Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Due to Pandu's death at an early age, his minor children and widow were the object of special care by all the elderly members of the family, especially Bhishmadeva and Mahatma Vidura. Vidura was more or less partial to the Pandavas due to their political position, although Dhritarashtra was equally careful for the minor children of Maharaj Pandu. He was one of the intriguing parties who wanted to wash away the descendants of Pandu and replace them by raising his own sons to become the rulers of the kingdom. Mahatma Vidura could follow this intrigue of Dhritarashtra and company, and therefore, even though he was a faithful servitor of his eldest brother Dhritarashtra, he did not like his political ambition for the sake of his own sons. He was therefore very careful about the protection of the Pandavas and their widow mother. Thus he was, so to speak, partial to the Pandavas, preferring them to the sons of Dhritarashtra, although both of them were equally affectionate in his ordinary eyes. He was equally affectionate to both the camps of nephews in the sense that he always chastised Duryodhana for his intriguing policy against his cousins. He always criticized his elder brother for his policy of encouragement to his sons, and at the same time, he was always alert in giving special protection to the Pandavas. All these different activities of Vidura within the palace politics made him well known as partial to the Pandavas. Maharaj Yudhisthira has referred to the past history of Vidura before his going away from home for a prolonged pilgrim's journey. Maharaj Yudhisthira reminded him that he was equally kind and partial to his grown-up nephews even after the battle of Kurukshetra, a great family disaster. Before the battle of Kurukshetra, Dhritarashtra's policy was peaceful annihilation of his nephews, and therefore he ordered Purochana to build a house at Varanavata. And when the building was finished, Dhritarashtra desired that his brother's family live there for some time. When the Pandavas were going there in the presence of all the members of the royal family, Vidura tactfully gave instructions to the Pandavas about the future plan of Dhritarashtra. This is specifically described in the Mahabharata Adiparva 1.14. He indirectly hinted, quote, "A weapon not made of steel or any material element can be more than sharp. Can be more than sharp to kill an enemy. And he who knows this is never killed," end quote. That is to say, he hinted that the party of the Pandavas was being sent to Varanavata to be killed, and thus he warned Yudhisthira to be very careful in their new residential palace. He also gave indications of fire, and said that fire cannot extinguish the soul, but can annihilate the material body. But one who protects the soul can live. Kunti could not follow such indirect conversations between Maharaj Yudhisthira and Vidura, and thus when she inquired from her son about the purport of the conversation, Yudhisthira replied that from the talks of Vidura, it was understood that there was a hint of fire in the house where they were proceeding. Later on, Vidura came in disguise to the Pandavas and informed them that the housekeeper was going to set fire to the house on the 14th night of the waning moon. It was an intrigue of Dhritarashtra that the Pandavas might die altogether with their mother, And by his warning, the Pandavas escaped through a tunnel underneath the earth, so that their escape was also unknown to Dhritarashtra. So much so that after setting the fire, the Kauravas were so certain of the death of the Pandavas that Dhritarashtra performed the last rites of death with great cheerfulness. And during the mourning period, all the members of the palace became overwhelmed with lamentation. But Vidura did not become so because of his knowledge that the Pandavas were alive somewhere. There are many such instances of calamities, and in each of them, Vidura gave protection to the Pandavas. On one hand and on the other, he tried to restrain his brother Dhritarashtra from such intriguing policies. Therefore, he was always partial to the Pandavas, just as a bird protects its eggs by its wing. Yudhisthira Vacha, api smarata no yushmat pakshachchaya samedhitan vipadgana ishat nyadev ochita yat samatika. This word paksha means wings or bird. It's also said Panduputrana Samajaya Pakche Janardana. So the Pandu, the sons of Pandu are always victorious, because they take the side of Janardana, because they have joined the side of Krishna. So, they're protected by the Lord. Anyone who takes shelter of the Lord becomes protected and victorious. This is also stated at the last portion of the Bhagavad Gita. Wherever there is Krishna and Arjuna, there will certainly be victory, extraordinary power, opulence, morality, and success like that. So, the Pandavas were protected by the Lord and by his dear devotee, Vidura. Vidura acted very much like a spiritual master. He was always giving good advice, and he, especially it's mentioned here, Yudhisthira is remembering how that he saved them from the arson, especially, because there was a plan. Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana had a plan to peacefully annihilate them by fire. They built the house of lacquer so that it would be very combustible and it would burn up very quickly. And Yudhisthira Maharaj, being so obedient to his elders, he went there without any hesitation, even though there may have been some indication of danger. He always considered following the instructions of elders to be very important. So he went there, and the people of Varanata, they received him very well, the Pandavas. But there was this Purochana, who was a minister of Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. And it was the plan that after some time that the house would be set on fire with the Pandavas and their mother inside. But they didn't want to do it right away, because then it would be too obvious what was happening. So they were very diplomatic, and they waited for about a year. But as we hear, Vidura already gave Yudhisthira the hint. So Yudhisthira was alert, and they were in anxiety. Transcendental anxiety, because they had service to perform for the Lord. But also Vidura, either he came in disguise or he sent one excavator, either way. And the excavator dug a tunnel from inside the house so that the tunnel would make it a very small opening and they could go inside. It was hidden so no one could see it. And then when it was the right time, they could go inside the tunnel and escape outside. That was the plan. And it so happened, after about 1 year, Kunti had a reception for brahmanas. She was offering a nice feast and festivities, giving gifts. And it so happened that one Nishada lady was there with her 5 sons. And evidently there was some, at least some of the persons there were drinking alcoholic beverages, because all of them became intoxicated. This Nishada woman and her 5 sons became so intoxicated that they fell asleep. They couldn't even leave the palace. And this was the indication. Yudhisthira took the opportunity and had the house set on fire at the doorway. Just Rochan also was sleeping soundly after the celebration. So the house was set ablaze, and the Pandavas went inside the tunnel, and in no time, because it was made of lac, it burnt to ashes. And everyone thought that the 5 sons were the Pandavas, and that this Nishada woman's remains was Kunti. Everyone except Vidura and Lord Krishna. So, in this way, Pandavas were saved. This verse is very nice because we learn many things about the Vedic culture from this verse. We see how the spiritual master, Vidura, gives instructions to save the disciple from all calamities, from all difficulties. And we see how Yudhisthira, as perfect disciple, could understand the instructions of the spiritual master, even though it was difficult for others. And it was with great faith, complete faith, in those instructions that he carried out the activity of setting the house on fire. Actually, it was quite a risky thing to do. Because Yudhisthira, you know, Dharmaraj, he would never do anything against Dharma. He would never do anything immoral. So to set the house on fire knowing that several people were sleeping inside, normally that would be considered an immoral act. But he had confidence, yet faith, in the words of the spiritual master, Vidura. And as a fact, as it turned out, that was the most moral thing to do. Chanakya Pandit says that when you're dealing with a cunning person, the word is shakti, if you're dealing with someone who's very cunning, very devious, very clever, you should be more cunning to outsmart them. It's not that we should be naive. That wouldn't have been a very great accomplishment if Yudhisthira Maharaj had been so naive not to take advantage of the circumstance to protect himself. Because he knew that Lord Krishna wanted them to rule the world. Therefore, it was their duty to protect themselves. Another point here is that Kunti, she was not able to understand directly the indications given by Vidura. But it was her good quality that she had taken shelter of her sons, as widows are supposed to do. In the Vedic culture, the widow does not remarry and she does not go out independently, but she goes back under the protection of her elder son. So Kunti did that, and in this way she was able to also be protected. We can see make some kind of analogy that the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, like the instructions of Vidura in his books, are there for everyone, for all time. However, there is the tunnel also required to help us get out of the blazing fire of material existence. And that tunnel, we could say, is like ISKCON, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We don't just have books. We don't just have philosophy. But we have a practical means to apply them. A practical means to escape the blazing fire of material existence. Every morning we sing, Sam Saradava Nalalita Loka Tanaya Kadamata Nakanakpa. The spiritual master is receiving benediction from the ocean of mercy, just as the cloud pours water over the forest fire to extinguish it, so the spiritual master extinguishes the blazing fire of material existence. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of such a spiritual master. So, just as Vidura, he did not simply give the hint. No one could have faulted him. If he had simply given the hint and then prayed to the Lord, I hope that they understand. I hope Yudhisthira understood. I hope that they figure out to dig the tunnel. But no. He sent the excavator as well. Very expertly. So that the tunnel would surely be dug. In the same way, it was not enough simply for Srila Prabhupada to give the literature. He also gave the tunnel. He gave the practical means of executing devotional service. The practical means of becoming saved. This word is also used here. Mochita. Released. To get released from this blazing fire of material existence. Therefore, this movement of Srila Prabhupada should never be considered some kind of a material organization. That is very, very offensive. To refer to ISKCON as a material organization, it's very, very offensive. Srila Prabhupada would spend his time making a material organization? He had nothing better to do? How many times did we hear Srila Prabhupada criticize even the so-called liberated persons who came back to the material platform to open hospitals and to schools and altruistic activities? He criticized them like anything. Do you think he would do something similar after that criticism? He would be a hypocrite. Therefore, we cannot say that this gun is material in any way. There's nothing material about it. It is a spiritual organization. It is meant to deliver persons back to home, back to Godhead. That's its only purpose. It has no other purpose. Now, along with that wonderful objective, saving people from this cycle of birth and death, There will be many other good benefits from ISKCON. It will also, of course, help people come to the mode of goodness who were formerly in passion and ignorance, and it will help those in ignorance come to passion. It's a fact. I remember I used to be involved in athletics before I joined the movement, and there was one of my friends who was a professional basketball player. And so after I joined the temple in 1970, so he came with his wife, and he was very submissive. We weren't that close before, but somehow or other, my taking to Krishna consciousness inspired him. So he came and he was inquiring, he and his wife were inquiring very submissively about what Krishna consciousness was. And I was in ecstasy. A professional basketball player, very famous, is coming. So I was preaching to him. He never came again. maybe my preaching wasn't so good. But I did see him some years later. I again looked him up, and we got together and we had a meeting. And he had become a raving born again Christian. It was just, he wouldn't let me speak one word. He was just constantly telling me, you know, about Jesus. And so before that, he didn't have any signs of religion at all. So, I don't know. Perhaps he got some inspiration to take up some form of religion. That's not the real purpose, but so many side benefits will be there from the Krishna consciousness movement. But primarily, the movement itself, and we should always remember this, that the movement itself is Prema Pumarta Mahat, to teach love of Godhead. This is the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's other goals in life. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, Purushartha. But those things are automatically achieved by one who takes to devotional service. There's a verse by Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur. He explains that mukti mukulitanjani sevatetma dharmartha kama samaye pratiksha. That one who takes to devotional service, mukti is standing with her hands folded, ready to serve him. And she's not alone. Her assistants, Dharma, Artha, and Kama, are also standing there, ready to serve the devotee. There's nothing lacking. Religion is there. Economic development is there. And sense gratification is there. It's not that a devotee of the Lord is lacking any of these things. He gets them all automatically without any separate endeavor. Either we look at it that from the point of view of karma, one gets a certain amount of happiness and distress, or if we say that we've surrendered to Krishna, then Krishna personally will take care to make sure that the devotee is satisfied. Krishna is not incapable of fulfilling the desires of his devotees or making sure that they're happy and comfortable. This is not difficult for Krishna. So, I think that if we can take this instruction, Srila Prabhupada told us to work within ISKCON, to build ISKCON, to expand it. This is our devotional service to do that. It is not fulfilling Prabhupada's desire if we leave ISKCON for any reason. Sometimes I remember Prabhupada was speaking in Los Angeles, and he was saying that if you're on a ship, and if there's someone on the ship that you don't get along with, still you don't jump off the ship if you're in the middle of the sea. You tolerate. After all, it's only for some time, and then we'll arrive on the shore and everything will be alright. So you tolerate somehow or other, even if there's problems. It's not acceptable to say, I don't get along with this person or I don't like that. It's not acceptable to leave the movement that Srila Prabhupada so painstakingly established and is a continuation of the mission of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Rupa Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is not such a light thing. One of my godbrothers, I heard him also speaking on this point once about the ship. This is really, I really love this example he gave. So he gave the example that if you're in the ship, you don't jump overboard. So everyone accepted that. But then someone raised their hand. And he said, but what if you're on the ship and people are pushing you off? This is a good question. And what did he answer? He said, well, you fight to stay on board the ship. It's obvious, but somehow or other, we become bewildered sometimes. Someone's trying to push you off the ship. What do? You fight to stay on the ship. You do whatever you have to do. You don't let them push you off. So there's no excuse. Yasya deve parabhaktir ta deve tagaro sasyate yatita prakasha prakasha pe mahatma. One who has implicit faith in both Guru and Krishna, for such a person, all the imports of the Vedic knowledge are automatically revealed. What does implicit mean? Dravida Prabhu? He said, without thinking about it, it's automatically assumed. Without doubting. Without any further consideration. So this is required if we're going to understand the Vedas. Therefore, there are many scholars who are very intelligent, but if they don't have implicit faith in the Guru and Krishna, then they will never understand the Vedas. All the imports of Vedic knowledge will not be revealed to them. Whereas, a person who may not be so materially qualified, but if he has implicit faith in Guru and Krishna, then all the imports of the Vedic knowledge will be revealed to him. But we should be careful, because simply having academic degrees is not the qualification for being able to explain the Vedas. Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atmabhakto. Unless one is completely faithful in devotional service, he may go on studying the Vedas for millions of lifetimes. He'll not understand anything. When Prabhupada speaks something, that should be the end of discussion. In other words, it's not that we debate whether or not that was correct, or whether there is some other alternative idea. No, at least we who are Prabhupada Nugas, we're following in his footsteps, we have to have this implicit faith. And Prabhupada taught us this when he was present. We cannot tolerate any slighting of the spiritual master. We cannot tolerate other opinions. He said, if you hear from even other Gaudiya Vaishnavas, if they say one thing different than I'm telling you, you'll all become confused and everyone will become bewildered. How many times have we seen that? So there's, it doesn't mean that we're becoming narrow-minded and we're becoming, we're not being respectful to other Vaishnavas. We respect all the Vaishnavas, anyone who's engaged in devotional service. In fact, we should respect even the ant. He has the super soul within his heart. But as far as what we do and what we accept as siddhanta and how we execute devotional service, that we take Srila Prabhupada as our Lord and Master. So, thank you for hearing. If there are any questions, the microphone. Well, if you speak, I'll repeat it. Yeah, that's the point. My question was, is there any sin coming to Yudhisthira and the Pandavas for apparently murdering? And I say no. Yes, because they were following the instructions of Vidura. Vidura, there's no sin. There's no sin for one who's engaged in pure devotional service. Did Arjuna have sin? How many persons did he kill? Millions. No sin. When one acts on the order of the Lord, there's no sin. So, someone like Vidura, he would never, ever ask anyone to engage in sinful activity. The pure devotee never asks anyone to engage in sinful activity. He only engages them in the purest moral principles of devotional service. Okay. Oh, I see. So, the point is being made that Vidura just told him to watch out for fire. He didn't tell him. So that was the realization of Yudhisthira Maharshi, that this was the best means to accomplish that. So yes, he acted under the direction of his spiritual master, and Krishna also gave him guidance, perfect guidance. In a minute. In a second. After this minute. We should accept. Can we give her the microphone? It was just there. Hare Krishna.
We said we should accept Srila Prabhupada's statement as final and not the end of the discussion, but often we see very sincere devotees apparently getting very different ideas, and Prabhupada did say apparent contradictory statements about various things. So, how do we understand? You can say, well, Prabhupada said this, that's it, the root, finish. But someone else says, Prabhupada said this, that's it. So, sometimes there seems to be
non-communication. Yes. If we're confused about understanding the conclusion, both of them apparently, then there can be some discussion, and according to time and circumstance, that's all right. But when something is very clear, then there's no need for giving the gona. There's different. If something is very clear, then we accept the direct explanation. If something is not clear, then there may be some room for trying to understand further.
So, well, the point is, what I'm sort of trying to get to is that both devotees are totally convinced that they really understand what Prabhupada's saying, but they have totally different understandings. And Prabhupada is saying both things.
Yes.
So,
sometimes there may be disagreements even between Vaishnavas. That doesn't mean that either side is necessarily wrong. There may be sometimes when they're both right. And in that case, we don't take sides. We can accept that there may be transcendental differences of opinion between Vaishnavas.
So how do you get to what Prabhupada does want us to do? Obviously, he wants the movement to go on. He wants us to work together. He wants us to have a real understanding, to study from various angles of vision. So how do we understand what Prabhupada actually wants us to do?
Well, we also have a system set up by Krishna and also by Srila Prabhupada that we consult with higher authorities. And within ISKCON, we have a practical example of that. The Governing Body Commission has been commissioned by Srila Prabhupada to give us guidance on these issues that may be difficult to understand. After all, if we have faith that Srila Prabhupada was intelligent and he had a good plan how to spread Krishna consciousness, then part of that plan is to work within the system that he established. So I think we've exhausted our time. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.